It's about 3 o'clock on October 6th. I'm talking with
Alex Londos.
And Alex, we spoke before, you reminded me, about tiny homes. Review that for us and then bring us up to date.
Okay, thank you. So I built the micro tiny homes. It was my initial idea and creation. And since I built two of them, and there's two people living in them right now, one's by CVS and the other one is by the stairs that, you know, the metal stairs that go towards the boardwalk, kind of along San Lorenzo River. Two people have been living in those on and off for about a year now. Since it was such a great idea, it made it on the news, it made it in the Sentinel, you did some stories on it, that a gentleman from San Jose actually started a huge project regarding this. So he now has 40 volunteers. He's almost completed his first 6 units, and then he's building 7 more. So there's one person working on painting them, one person working on building them. There's people on the legal team. He's starting a nonprofit, and he's really expanded this project. So they're building a lot in San Jose, and they meet up multiple times every week. So if anyone would like to volunteer and help us build more of them, there's volunteer opportunities. The website to learn more is microtinyhome.com. We're just trying to build as many of these as possible and then get them out to the homeless people in San Jose or ship some of them here and elsewhere throughout, you know, the Bay Area and California. So his branch of the project is expanding exponentially. One day there was 37 people, 30, 40. I mean, there's just so many people coming together building these, and it's just so rewarding for me that I started this project and other people are now duplicating it.
Now, remind me of what kind of space these folks have and what kind of facilities they have in these tiny homes.
Yeah. So, of course, there's all these empty houses, all these empty hotels. There's the 1% and the divide between the rich and the poor. And, of course, we wish we can give homeless people housing, you know, with a kitchen and a bath and all this. But it's not realistic. There's thousands and tens of thousands of homeless people around, you know, California, the United States,
and
around the
millions
world.
Millions of vacant buildings as
well. Which is a huge problem. Billions of vacant buildings, which, of course, we want to get those back, but it doesn't do any good saying, oh, give us those vacant buildings, this and that. So
they never give it them. They've got to be taken. That's what I was saying.
Or taken. Or you could actually just do something to help the situation, and that's this project. So if you saw someone sitting on the street, sleeping on the street, you can all day you can say there's empty places, go move into them, but legally that doesn't work, but you can give that person a tent. So this is kind of like giving them a tent, but we give them a micro tiny home. The new models have big wheels, and you could wheel it around like a wheelbarrow. You can keep all your stuff in it. It's warm and dry, and it's a safe place to sleep.
How big is it?
They're 8 feet long. They're about 4 feet tall and about 4 feet wide. And then they're a really cool shape that's artistic. And they're designed to be pulled behind a car, behind a motorcycle, behind a bike, pushed, put in the back of a pickup truck, or just set in a specific location. And the project is just taking off really quick. People are interested. My GoFundMe raised a lot of money. His GoFundMe is now at $3,000. People are investing, donating.
The cost of making your particular two items was?
It's about $500 was the initial cost, but when we put solar panels and the flame retardant paint and other little features, it comes to around $700 to $800. And that's not including the, you know, the labor or anything else, because it's all volunteers putting these together. But around $600 to $800 is the range.
So when you approached the city council with a proposal of this kind, their response was?
I'll tell you their response. I was painting the unit over here by CVS for Jeremiah, and one of the city council members, second to the mayor, I don't remember her name, this was about 4 months ago.
Bruner, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Colin Terry Johnson?
It was a female, and I think she
They're all females except one.
Oh, okay. So maybe of some sort of Spanish, Mexican, Filipino descent or something. She came up, really nice woman. She supported the project. She loved the project. She's talking to Jeremiah. She brought him a burrito. She was asking about it.
Jeremiah is the resident?
Yeah, correct. Jeremiah is the resident of the one by CVS. So she loved the project and the idea. I'm not sure how the city feels about creating more of them or what they're doing, but basically they've been giving me, thankfully, they've been giving me space to build these, set them places, because Jeremiah was sleeping on the street by UPS for 2 months on the ground on the sidewalk. Now he's been sleeping in that every month.
Is Jeremiah the guy with the stutter?
Yeah, and he's kind of shorter, a little stutter. Really nice guy.
He used to come to our meetings. I don't know.
Super nice guy. And, I mean, he doesn't deserve to sleep on the streets. Nobody does. So he now sleeps in that every single night, and he has for like maybe 8 months, a long time.
Last time you spoke to him was?
3 days ago, 4 days ago. Yeah, so I...
How's he like it?
He loves it every time. He loses the key in the lock, and he's like, oh, I lost the key to my house. So I created, it's happened like maybe 5 to 7 times. So I created this new lock design that mounts onto the structure, and it's a combination. So you can't lose the lock or the key. It's a new system that we're now implementing on all the micro tiny homes. So there's no key and lock to lose. And he loves it. Ryan lives on the one by the levee and the metal stairs. He's lived in it for about 4 to 6 months. He loves it. He goes back to it every night. It locks all of his stuff secure, so he doesn't have to carry around a huge backpack. Jeremiah and some of these people, they don't got to push around a shopping cart. Their stuff is safe, and then they have a warm place to go. Now, tents, the problem, they're not waterproof, but you know, water leaks underneath tents, and it floods. So these are waterproof, and they're up off the ground because nobody likes being cold and wet. And no one likes getting their stuff stolen. So it solves a lot of those major issues. And it gives them like the entitlement of owning something, having something that they'll protect and keep safe. And it's been a really fun project.
So what improvements have the residents of these two places suggested? Or have you found that There may have been some concerns about this kind of housing, which you think need to be ultimately addressed. What would you say they are?
Yeah. So far, neither one of them have expressed any concerns that I have not addressed. Ryan has never complained about anything. He loves the unit. He goes back to it every day. I painted the outside. It has trees on it. It looks really cool. And then Jeremiah, the one thing that he complained about was that it didn't have a window. And that's because that was the first model. The first model did not have a window. So I just went over there with my drill, my skill saw. I purchased some plexiglass. And it was very easy to cut this angled thing and, you know, put the window in, put some caulking in and fix it. And I resolved it for Jeremiah. Even though he didn't complain about losing the key in the lock, I saw that as a problem. So I then found a solution after a lot of research, you know, looking on eBay and just searching different types of options. I finally narrowed it down. So this is what the unit looks like.
You're showing me on your phone.
So you can see that it's painted on the side. And then that's the unit Ryan's staying in. This is the units that we're building. You can see it has wheels.
It's sort of a quadrilateral-shaped building.
Okay, correct. And then these are all the
structure,
yeah. These are all the volunteers. And we locate these close to a bathroom, a trash can, and, you know, a downtown area, so then they can still go get food and everything that they need. So we're trying to design them, you know, with minimal resources to help the most amount of people. And then there's the solar panel on the back of the window, and then the new models have wheels on the bottom. And again, they can be pulled behind a bike, a car, loaded into a truck, and they're just really mobile.
Strangely like a somewhat oblong coffin.
Uh-huh, correct. It is like that, and the thing is it lowers the cost, because even if we built a tiny home, you got to get permitting and red tape. There's no red tape on this because it's mobile. It's smaller. So you can't, it's like giving someone a tent. You know, you can't just give someone a tiny home.
The legislature gets its hands on it.
Right. They'll always find ways to slow down projects. That's
some way
to
tax you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, with taxing. And here's some of the blueprint designs that have been put together. Jason did this. He actually is an aerospace engineer for NASA. The guy that's working on the project now in San Jose. So he designed all of these in CAD or something. And all of the volunteers that come over, most of them are NASA employees, or they work for like other tech companies over in Silicon Valley, or they are part of this program.
Those look like a pretty white crew, I got to say. I see a few maybe darker faces.
Yeah, correct.
There's
a lot of Asian descent. Maybe not in this image, but again, this is just one image.
You're showing me a picture of about, what, 30 people?
I think I counted 29, 30, yeah, one time when I counted. So, yeah, that's how it's working. So, again, this is how I painted the side to make it visual.
You're an artist as well as an architect.
Sure. Yeah, tried my best. And so this is the production line. And again, if anyone wants to volunteer to make some of these, we're just trying to do something. And this allows us to help the most amount of people. Even if you house someone, that's money every day. You build a tiny home. Of course, the government has that, but we don't, people. And people want to be able to help homeless people more than just giving them socks and food and even a tent. This is more of a long-term situation.
How long does it take to build such one of these?
That's really tough to say because I worked on it, a few hours here and there, and a group of this many people. We don't have that down yet, I apologize, but we did try to make it as simplistic as possible so we could streamline them. Now these six are almost complete. I don't have any pictures, but they're now painted.
You're showing me a bunch. Looks like sort of, and they're open-ended, almost like large crates or boxes, mm-hmm. or containers,
yes.
Although the kind of containers you see are much longer, and they're made of metal, and they're they're shipping containers, but these are smaller.
Yeah, they're smaller, and so it's bigger than a coffin. So if you think of a two-person tent, that's way smaller than a coffin. So these are bigger than a two-person tent because they're actually 8 feet long, 4 feet wide. So it resembles a coffin, but they're pretty big. They're pretty tall. You can sit up, move around, and several occasions, multiple people have slept in these and lived in these, so they're big enough for two people. Multiple people that have stayed in these or lived in them in the past have had company over. I don't know how they did it, but they did it for a long time.
I know it sounds a lot cheaper than tiny homes as described in, by the more ambitious entrepreneurs who want to make a killing off the homelessness boom.
It's because there's so many solutions, and this allows individuals and volunteers to work on this project. There's higher level organizations and that working on tiny homes. But the thing with tiny homes is it's just all the red tape. They want to get tax money in this and that. It's red tape.
The expense. They charge a lot for tiny homes.
Okay, yeah, exactly. I mentioned that earlier. But I think in a perfect world, if to solve homelessness, I think we need more caseworkers and health workers and all of that. Of course, universal health care would be great. But aside from that, I think universal basic income. So, because the divide between the rich and the poor continues to grow. So if we had universal basic income, I think that would bring up, the poor and the poverty level, and they would be able to do better. And then I think just cutting away the red tape, basically, there's just all this red tape with tiny homes. I knew someone 5 years ago that, millionaire that owned a lot of properties, they couldn't even just put a tiny home on their property for a residence because it's there's just so much legalities, and that's why we constantly see people living in sheds and garages and all these weird things. It's just, there's not enough housing, and there's not enough affordable housing.
If you were to hire someone to build one of these, how many hours would you say it would take to do, and how much would the cost of the materials be?
If you hired someone, wow, good question. I think no more than 20 hours. If you had all the tools and everything was sitting right there, because if I think of, if I put 2 hours here and there, if I worked on it straight, I think it was probably in between 10 to 20 hours to build one of them. Especially if it was two people and someone handed me tools and did stuff like that. But that is tough to tell because we've never mathematically figured it out. And we have right now different volunteers working at different times.
What kind of skills do you need to do this kind of work?
Good question. So we're taking anybody with any skills because there's so many different things to do. Sometimes it's complicated construction stuff. Other times it's excuse me, could you please just hand me that tool? Because if the one person keeps walking back and forth, that's time taken away from building the project, or to grab a screw or to grab some basic stuff. We do have artists over there that are painting all the units.
You say over there.
Oh, over in Silicon Valley, painting them. They're actually there today, painting the units that are almost complete.
So actually, you operate mostly out of Silicon Valley?
So these two units, I started here, and all the information is available open source on the website, microtinyhome.com. And now Jason started his branch that's huge, that's taking off with all of those 40 to 50 volunteers, because sometimes 37
people. That's the picture you showed me.
Yeah, and that's just taking off crazy. But then Andrew, which works with a lot of churches, started his own branch in Sacramento, and he's almost finished his first unit. And other people around the world have been contacting me about the designs, because I designed it to be cut in one piece of plywood. That's why they're that size, because if you wanted it bigger, then you got to start doing framing, and it costs more money and more time. So the unit you saw is an exoskeleton, so there's no internal frame with 2x4s. So it's easier for us to build cheaper, faster, quicker, and efficiently, and environmentally friendly. So that's the goal, is not to use a whole bunch of extra stuff, just to do the basic. Because I've been homeless before, and I've been out on these streets, no overhang, and you're embarrassed. You don't want to, like, sleep in a doorway. You don't want people to see you. So I've
slept. Piss your pants.
Yeah, I don't know if that's happened, but...
Good.
I've slept in those bike lockers, and it's not fun.
And that's illegal, I would like to point out.
I know, but it's the safest spot that I could find that was
warm. You are a criminal. You are confessing this on
air. So I built these because when I was homeless, I would rather sleep in a bike locker because that was the warmest, safest place that I could find. And I'm not going to sleep under the awning of a business, because then that's also trespassing and people see you and it's embarrassing. You know, they come to their business and they see you right there. I didn't want people to know I was homeless, so I slept in a bike locker. I got the bike card.
How long ago was this your experience of this?
I've lived in Santa Cruz for 32 years. I believe when that happened was probably 5 to 7 years ago, maybe once or twice, but I also, when I was like maybe 22, 23, and you know, it's like you're downtown, you're stuck, you missed the last bus to Boulder Creek when I lived up there, you have nowhere to stay. So there's a lot of situations where I was in between houses, and I, a few times, I've slept in bike lockers, and that's kind of like this. It's like when you're homeless.
Bike lockers in Santa Cruz.
In Santa Cruz, yeah. Like, I think if I was homeless right now, there's no doubt in my mind I would rather sleep in that than sleep under a doorway, or because you can't always like go out and like get a tent, and you can't.
Now, are lockers still actually available in theory for those lawbreakers who want to sleep in them?
It's
or
so tough to get the card. I tried literally for my bike. It's just so difficult to like get that little card to like sign up the form and do all these different things, even if you have a bike. So they make it really difficult just to get that park card.
Give me an example. Tell me how that process is, the difficulties you've encountered.
Well, they made it difficult.
Because until those homes start appearing in Santa Cruz, bike lockers may be the alternative for some people.
I think bike lockers would be a great alternative for a lot of people, even if it was illegal. You know, some people look the other way because it's better than having them sleep in the rain in doorwells. But the bike locker cards, they make it difficult to get, because they don't want people sleeping in them. So you gotta like have a credit card, an ID, you gotta prove an address, you gotta get mail. They like, the whole application process was really complicated. So if you have a bike, maybe you're staying at someone's house that isn't even your address, or your travel, it's just, they just made it so difficult. And it's also just bad for the environment every time people sleep on the streets or don't lock up their bike. We're doing so many things wrong in the world, and it's a lot of times it's just because of greed. And, you know, we see Santa Cruz becoming more gentrified and the wealthy 1% buying all these houses and, you know, all these vacant air. It's just, there are so many things that could be done better. And that's why we need more caring people. If anyone wants to volunteer with us, we meet up in San Jose 3 to 5 every Thursdays, and on Saturdays 11 to 6.
So even if you want to build a home, and what do we call your tiny home?
Micro tiny homes.
Micro tiny homes. If you want to build a micro tiny home in Santa Cruz, you have to go to San Jose.
Unless you want to get my design open source, that's available on the website, microtinyhome.com.
Has anyone offered to do that in the last year?
A lot of people have, yeah. I've gotten a lot of phone calls.
Has anybody in Santa Cruz built any homes the last year that you know of?
Just people with me, because it's easier to build with me. So, yeah, I've had a lot of volunteers.
And so how many homes have you built other than these two for Santa Cruz?
Unfortunately, I built two, and I was working with 3 volunteers building the third one, and we were on the west side. And this one guy came up, and he's like, oh, cool, what are you building? And we told him, and he was like, fuck you, fuck the homeless people, get them out of here, this and that. Like, go back to where you came from. And I'm like, I've lived here for 30 years. He was a jerk. He stole the micro tiny home. He destroyed it and dumped it up the coast when my girlfriend and I went to go get a burrito. So we were there all day. We left to go get dinner, and the guy, like, broke the whole thing, took it off in a pickup truck or something, and took it up the coast and destroyed it. But I'm almost positive it's that
name
guy.
Of the individual. In question?
I don't know. Otherwise, the police are looking for him. The police have been very helpful. They actually called me one time for the first few days when it was missing, and they were so excited that they found it, but they actually just reported the one Ryan's living in. And I was like, no, sorry, that's not the one that was...
They didn't arrest Ryan, luckily.
No, yeah, luckily. Yeah. So that was the one that someone's already housed in. But then like a week or two later, we found it, and it was destroyed
when
up the coast.
When did this happen?
maybe like 4 to 6 months ago. I'm bad with time, but that was, it set me back with the projects. I had, you know, everything invested in that next unit, the third unit. It like lowered my morale. My volunteers were kind of disappointed, but those volunteers now work with the larger team over in San Jose. And now I work with the team in San Jose and I focus all my effort on that because they're doing everything professional. They have groups and teams, everything's organized. There's tools, there's supplies. There's a pizza oven where they're making pizza. It's at a nice house, a nice property. It's just
the price increased or decreased in order to make these homes through this new process?
Probably exactly the same, because he's using all of the same things and buying everything from the same places that I purchased. They have a solar panel on the roof and all the basics. The new feature is the artists that are now painting all those units over there. But the solar system on the inside is so they could plug in the USB and charge their phones and their tablets and stuff. So he's basically doing all of the same design as mine. There's like a couple little tiny changes, but it's basically the same as it's basically exactly the same with where we're buying everything and how we're buying it.
And if people want to get in touch with you, are you still renting or living in Santa Cruz?
Yes, correct. Yes, I'm still here.
How can you afford it?
Splitting a room with my girlfriend, basically.
Splitting a closet with your girlfriend?
Yeah, it's really small and really pricey. So most of the time, I'm out on adventures and sleeping in my car and traveling and doing other stuff. But the rest of the time, yeah. But Santa Cruz is expensive, so we're out in Scotts Valley now. A little bit further. I wish that I lived in Boulder Creek. I probably wouldn't live in Watsonville, but you know, if you're out a little bit further, it's a little bit cheaper.
Scotts Valley police haven't yet discovered your micro tiny homes.
No, they haven't. And yeah, the Scotts Valley police...
They did pass a camping ban recently. Well, about 10 years ago in Scotts Valley.
They seem a little bit more harsh out there in Scotts Valley than Santa Cruz. It's just, I don't know what they expect, because if they say don't sleep there, the homeless people are going to go there, here, here. I mean, there's just not enough...
It's not a rational response.
Yeah.
You don't get a reasonable response. Otherwise, it would have been dealt with decades, eons ago. You
know, so. Yeah, correct. It's a huge problem, and we need... So it doesn't matter if it's tiny homes, if it's Brent Adams' solution, if it's Keith's solution, your solution, my solution. It's a huge problem. It needs all of us working towards solutions, because nobody has the perfect answer. Of course, government would be a big part of the solution if there was the right funding and housing, universal basic income, tiny homes, opening up some hotels, more jobs. It's like, even if you lose your ID, it is so difficult to get a new ID or to get a post office without an address. There's so many catch-22s just to get back on your feet once you lose everything.
How do other advocates and other homeless activists respond to your work? Have you, you know, you've mentioned Keith and Brent and others and other groups who are concerned with defending, for example, the current living space of people on this in the San Lorenzo Park benchlands.
Yeah.
Or those who have been driven away from Highway 1 and Highway 9, or the place near the Highway 9 bridge area. Have you talked to many of those folks? Any reaction from them?
Yeah, so I'm going to say, like, the four largest homeless advocates that I can think of: Brent Adams, Keith McHenry, Stephanie Ross, and Alicia, that was running for city council. So out of all of those, I supported Alicia's, all of her projects, all of Keith McHenry's. I've interviewed him, I've helped him, I've volunteered for him. I've supported Brent Adams, I've done everything that I can to promote for him. So when I started doing my project, they all got very angry, except for Stephanie Ross. Stephanie Ross supported my project 100%, helped the people housed in them. And did
who Stephanie Ross is.
She runs the Great Share Collective. So she is a wonderful person that has really helped our community.
The Great Share Collective is...
She gets supplies to people that need it the most.
And how do people contact... Is it located in a particular location?
She has a Facebook page and a group, and a lot of people have heard of the Great Share Collective. So she has done a lot of good things for the community. I've got her interviews and we've collaborated and stuff. She's a really great person. So she supported my project, but Keith McHenry, Brent Adams, and Alicia, they all talk shit about my project and they all want me to volunteer.
I haven't talked shit about your project.
No, thank you. But Brent Adams constantly criticizes me and then says, come volunteer for me. He's just so aggressive and angry. So he doesn't want anybody doing anything else. He wants to control everything. He says, don't do what you're doing. Come work for me. He is has posted, like, maybe he's drunk, so many negative, rude things, huge paragraphs on social media, like just being a jerk about me and my project. And I'm just trying to help. So he's like, you got to house them, you got to do this and that and all this. And it's like, but if you give a tent to someone, why all of a sudden do you got to house them and feed them and take care of them and do all this other stuff? When you give someone a micro tiny home, it's just like giving them a tent. All of a sudden, I'm not their caretaker. That's not my area of expertise. So he has been a jerk. And then Keith McHenry always says on Facebook, they look like a coffin. Your project is stupid. They look like a coffin. Oh, they look like a coffin. It's just like, I have been so cool with Keith. Now I just want to fight both of them. They're just jerks. It's like, really? Fuck you guys. I've tried working with them, and then they just hate my project so much because they want to be in control of, like, the homeless people. They want to be, like, the gods of, like, passing out food and doing this. I was trying to work with all of them, like Stephanie Ross and, like, the guy in San Jose, but they just want to be, like, I don't know, like, leaders.
Has Stephanie contributed to the project at all?
Yeah, a lot. She's just a wonderful person. There was a guy that was involved in a car accident. His car rolled a whole bunch in Bonnie Doon. He cracked his head open, brain surgery, completely split open, fractured his spine, broken ribs, all kinds of surgeries, and really messed up. He didn't have housing. He was sleeping in a tent in the rain in the winter. And I moved him into one of the structures. And he, like, still, he just got out of Stanford. He was in Stanford for a month and ICU and all that. He had nowhere to live. So I moved him into a micro tiny home. Stephanie and her team were bringing in
food. San Jose.
No, oh, that was here. Yeah.
It wasn't Ryan or either the other Ryan or Jeremiah's.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for asking. It was a different man, Chris. It was Chris. Mm-hmm. So he lived in the micro tiny home. I showed everybody on social media and everybody criticized me. Get him housing, get this, get that. But I couldn't. That's not what I specialize in. Stephanie Ross tried. Everybody tried. Brent criticized me for not getting him housing. I don't know how to get him housing. And that's not what I do. I was building micro tiny homes.
I don't know how to get him housing either.
Yeah, I don't. But everybody tried and criticized me. And then, but Stephanie Ross, she brought him food. She connected people to bring him food. But all of this through the community, nobody was able to get him housing. He lived in the unit for like 6 months and healed. Nobody can get him housing. Everybody tried, but nobody could.
Get housing. You gave him housing.
Yeah, so it's like, it just sucks that people that were that injured had nowhere to go, and he was sleeping in a tent in the rain, and nobody could secure him housing. And everybody kept criticizing me, and other people that didn't tried, and nobody could. It's just, that's how messed up the Santa Cruz system is, and how we don't take care of homeless people. Doesn't matter if they're, like, dying and dead. It's just, it's so horrible. So
how's the homeless lack of services center, as I call it, Coral Street, treat you?
I don't know anything about what they do.
Housing matters. They have a lot of, I call them dog sheds, but they're bigger than dog sheds.
Oh,
they have,
right.
You see, if you've been out there, you see a lot of
just from over the fence,
small structures, you know. That.
But we need 1,000.
They're pretty expensive compared to yours. I mean, according to what you say your costs are.
But it's not just that. They got to pay, like, taxes and the land and this and that and all this area. And my units are mobile and they roll around, so they can go to, like, a different, you know, different locations. Those units are great and probably legal. But, yeah, again, it's expensive per unit. And, you know, having the manager on site or, you know, people taking – it's just
Have you gotten any other positive or negative response from – I guess they call themselves – I call them housing smidgens, but they call themselves housing matters.
Okay. No, I'm not really in contact with them other than my only experiences is that the first guy that was in a wheelchair that I moved into the unit by CVS, he lived in it for 3 weeks. Okay, first he was downtown homeless for years. Then he was sleeping outside in the same spot with his wheelchair for months in the same spot.
Name of the guy?
I don't remember. That was a while ago. It was the first guy in the first project.
How long ago?
Probably a year and a half ago is when I started this project. Yeah. So he was living on the sidewalk, on the street. So I got him into the unit, and after 3 weeks, he got secured housing with Housing Matters. After being homeless for years and years and years, because once you get a good night's rest, you're not sleeping on the street, you could actually make a phone call. You can go somewhere. You can take care
of
stuff.
How visible was he in this location where he was sleeping in your structure?
I keep him visible because I try to put high priority people into the units that are elderly, disabled, injured, mentally handicapped, women for safety reasons. I try to put high priority people, so then when it's in a prime location, people can see it. I can then tell volunteers.
Where was this guy? What was the location?
Right at the corner of CVS, right by the bridge and the stairs.
And do you think this accounted for the Housing Matters actually successfully searching for housing for him.
Yes, I do think so, because he made it on the news. He made it on, like, KION news right on Christmas Day, the main story interviewing him.
Are Jeremiah and Ryan looking for housing of a different sort than the kind you provide?
I think Jeremiah could use housing, but I don't think he's physically or mentally capable of knowing any of the steps to find housing for himself. So it's sad. So he doesn't deserve to sleep on the streets just because he doesn't know all the steps or processes to go through. Ryan, I'm not as sure about his situation, but I think...
Are you suggesting it was Chris's initiative that got this done, or assistance from Housing Matters that was initiated by them?
I don't remember the first guy's name. Chris was the guy that was injured in the other unit. Yeah,
I'm sorry. The first guy that only there for 3 days.
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Weeks. So no problem. He was there. A lot of information. So he was there for 3 weeks, and I think that just any time you get a good night's rest in a safe place that's warm and dry, then your mind works better to figure things out. So I think that was part of it. The other part was that he kind of got really famous because it was the first micro tiny home. People would stop by and visit it. Even when he was in it, he said the police stopped by. They were like, "Oh, this is cool. What is it?" And then the county workers stopped by. "Whoa, this is weird. Cool." They were all really cool with him. And then I think that helped him get housing because he also made it on the news and everybody knew that he was the guy that slept on the streets, that was in the wheelchair. And then he was in the micro tiny home and he was looking for housing. So I do think that it may be prioritized.
Has he been in touch with you or have you with him since?
I saw him on and off months after that, and he would say hi, he would thank me, he was really nice, he said that was a cool opportunity, and then since then, no, I haven't seen him for a while, so hopefully he's somewhere housed. So but basically the micro tiny homes, if you see it on the corner or somewhere, it's a good thing to tell people, like volunteers, like Stephanie Ross or a team, it's the micro tiny home here, instead of like, it's the tent, 3 tents down, it looks like this, it's this color, it's with some tarps. It's like hard to explain where someone's located in a tent.
But there aren't that many at the moment in Santa Cruz that you know of.
Micro tiny homes? Correct. But we also are like labeling them numbers. So when people need help or resources, what Jason's doing is how he's teaming up with other nonprofits that will go there and assist the people and help the people. And he's just doing incredible things. Again, he's like a NASA space engineer. He's working with a lot of these people from his work and friends and colleagues and family, and he's just put together some incredible teams of people that are really supporting this project. So the difference between the micro tiny homes is you could label them and mark them and tell, you know, this person needs food, this person needs, you know, medication.
Right, now, like, you only have two of them that are operational here.
Yes, correct. Yeah, here. And then he is almost completed 6 units, so he's in the final stages of that.
And these six units are destined for here or somewhere else?
Those don't really have a solid destination right now, probably in the San Jose area, but we have discussed that some of them are going to be overflowing into this area. The main difference is mine have smaller wheels, they're mobile, but his have bigger wheels, like big wheels, like this tall, like 8 inches.
8 inches?
Yeah, 8 to 12 inches. They're just larger, so you can move the units really easy. And my units move, but not as easy. And I could always upgrade my wheels, which I might do in the future. But the cool thing about his is that they're just going to be much more mobile. And you could lock them up, so there's a chain on it, so you lock it somewhere for like long term. But if you need to move it, if someone complains, then you just unlock it and you roll it somewhere else. So that's
what
the system.
What kind of credit, if any, are you getting for this work? I mean, are you getting, some people get, you know, royalties if you're if you're writing a book and other people use your work. Architects presumably get fees. Are you getting anything?
Okay, yeah, thank you for asking. So I did this project just because I have been homeless and I love tiny homes and I love minimalism and environmental projects and everything. So I initially started this with the intention just to help people, but then I realized I needed funding. So I did get about $6,000 through a GoFundMe, and that was just spent on the tools that I needed, supplies, rented a U-Haul on and off many times because I drive a Prius just to get supplies back and forth from Home Depot.
You and Alicia Cool both.
Yeah, I know. So I wish that I would have built more units, but I built the website, I hired people, I did all these different things with the money. So I got 3 built. Unfortunately, that one got stolen, but I got the platform set up. Now with that, I bought stickers and flyers, and I passed out all kinds of flyers, and I did a lot of stuff to get the word out about that project to more people. Now, Jason, he set up a GoFundMe. As far as me, I haven't made any other money since then, since the initial project.
You're getting thinner?
No, I'm working on other projects now. So I do a lot of journalism and activism and environmental projects. So now that project, the Micro Tiny Home, is not my main focus. I'm working on kind of other things, but I'm supporting Jason and his team 2 days out of the week. On Thursdays and Saturdays, and those are their build days. Now, all of my mind, my energy, my effort, my money, because I donated to his GoFundMe also, and my extra tools and everything, because he has the assembly chain, everything's going on really good over there. And you're welcome to stop by if you'd like anytime. You know, again, Thursday, 3 to 6, Saturday, 11.
In San Jose,
yeah.
I rarely get there, but, you know,
yeah,
it's
I know, me too.
Possible.
I know, I don't like going over the hill and leaving, you know, Santa Cruz, but that's where he has the house, he has the supplies and the tools and where everybody's converging. So, again, I'm not getting any royalties. I do have the website. I'm not collecting any more donations. I'm not getting anything from this project. Everything else is volunteering. I do eat the free pizza when I'm over at his house. You know, they have all this pizza in the pizza oven. So that's
you're making me hungry.
Yeah.
So what are you doing now that might have some implications for poor people and homeless people other than this project, if anything?
So throughout my life and living here over, again, 32 years, every single day, every other day, I'm constantly, you know, helping them in some way. Whether it's like if I buy something new, I give them the old thing, or I bring them food or supplies, or I somehow, you know, I grow some weed occasionally. I give them a bud here and there, some change or anything that I can. You know, I'm constantly helping them out the best they can, because when I was homeless...
What kind of journalism do you do? I mean, I'm not trying to either build up or impugn private charity, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And particularly if it comes from your heart and you feel it, you're not just, you know...
Yeah.
But in any case, but you say you're also doing some writing?
I'm more of a videographer. So I generally cover forest fires. So I covered 4 major forest fires this year. Mm-hmm. And my footage made it in Yahoo News, MSN. It made it on USA Today, Good Morning America. So I usually work with like a lot of the major news networks. This is all my footage, MSN. This is just some of them. So I go out and I cover hurricanes, forest fires, landslides. I went tornado chasing. Like 4 years ago, I went to Iraq by myself and I documented the war and everything that was going on over there with ISIS.
Were many connections with people that you still maintain?
Yeah, there was someone from the Peshmerga military that I do still keep in contact with.
Can you be my favorite terrorist?
Yeah, not a terrorist. There's a lot of good people over there too. This is actually my Iraq outfit when I was there, mm-hmm. Going on ride-alongs with the Peshmerga military. So I try to do, you know, journalism. But then I also am like an activist, so I use journalism to help raise awareness of homelessness.
I mean,
if
people want to read stuff that might be relevant to the topics we're talking about, not just, I don't know, how to contribute or the details of building a micro tiny home, but experiences you've had, opinions you have about things you think that are important locally in Santa Cruz, is there anywhere you'd suggest they go for your perspective?
You're really great at interviewing. Great question. And so it's my main thing is Facebook. So Facebook is all of my pictures, all of my videos, everything that I want to say, everything that I want to get out to people. And that is Alex Londos, but my first name spelled A-L-E-K-Z-L-O-N-D-O-S. I spell it a little different. And I've been spelling it that way for, you know, 20 years. So I just like the way that it looked and the way that it spells. So it's just like that, A-L-E-K-Z. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's my Facebook page. And I encourage people to follow me on Facebook, because anytime there's a major disaster, I raise awareness of that disaster, what people need, how to get resources into certain areas. And I have studied a lot of disaster relief courses. So that's why I'm trying to take my attention away from the Micro Tiny Home project and put it more towards disaster mitigation, climate change, and environmental issues.
How are you going to mitigate the disaster in Santa Cruz?
I tried over and over again. I mean, about forest fires. I've been doing climate emergency stuff for two decades.
More about the city council.
Oh, yeah, that is. But see, I even have climate emergency tattooed on my arm.
You do.
I've been trying to tell everybody.
In block letters.
In block letters. Forest fires, just defensible space. That's the main thing in Santa Cruz. I have been talking about, I did a documentary about it about 10 years ago, defensible space. I put it on community TV 40 times, and it was on repeat all the time, 10-minute documentary. And public service announcement, and nobody does defensible space, and everybody loses their houses. So that's what we're going to continue to see, more forest fires, and we're continuing to see no defensible space. That's like a big thing for California.
Any comments on the the new camping ordinance and the attempt to restrict RVs to ban RVs from parking except in designated areas that haven't been designated?
I think that's going to turn around and kick them in their butt, or whatever you say, is backfire or whatever. It's like, that's going to cause issues with the people that actually have houses and RVs and live. Yeah, it's just, it's confusing things. It's complicated. They're trying to find solutions the wrong way. I mean, the right solutions are like tiny homes and affordable housing, but we also need to do something systemic, like on a larger scale, and we need more larger solutions. All of these are little, these are like little solutions. My solution's a little solution, but I constantly see tickets all over RVs. And then they can't pay the tickets, and they get their RVs taken, and then they go to the homeless camps. And then when they complain, so it's like, do you want to complain about an RV, or do you want to complain about a homeless camp? And then them stealing your stuff and your car and breaking in. It's just
get the police to move them out of town.
Yeah, I know, that's not working either. So that's what I'm realizing with.
Don't get those damn courts. We don't need those damn courts.
That's a problem. I know. That's how they respond. People live in their vehicle. You tow the vehicle. Where do you think they're going to live? What do you think they're going to do? They're going to get more desperate, and they're going to live, on the streets and in camps. It's not a good solution. Tiny homes, I think, are like one of the best solutions. Affordable housing is a good solution. Not ticketing RVs and cars that homeless people are in that can't pay tickets. That's just not a good solution. Just makes things more difficult for them.
And now you get the last word, or the last 50 words or whatever.
I just, I've listened to some of your podcasts. You interview a lot of great people. Thanks again for this opportunity. I hope we just need more people working towards solutions. Our whole society is out of balance because there's sports and TV shows and video games and all like gambling and drugs, addictions and pornography. There's just all these distractions. Fancy Japanese food. But we need more people caring about other people and the environment and working towards solutions. And like, too many people are just distracted, and we're out of balance. Our society's out of balance.
And again, for people who want to check you out on Facebook, it's Alex Lando, spelled
A-L-E-K-Z-L-O-N-D-O-S.
And again, the project, for those interested in micro tiny homes, is
microtinyhome.com. A lot of information on that website.
Anything else?
Information. I also have the website Advanced Disaster Relief if you want to learn more about disaster relief and disaster mitigation. Yeah, that's all. Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Yeah, thanks.
All right.